known as the city of broad
shoulders. So, right? Welcome to the car journey to a small coffee house in Chicago. But look, on the way, Jeremy, you know that this city of Chicago is best known in Ireland and other places as the Windy City. Now, I presume that's a very cold wind coming down from the north, which freezes the, let's be exact, the balls off everybody. And that's why Chicago is the Windy City.
Right. I think that today's definition of the Windy City would be that. Right?
Oh, really?
That it's cold and those sorts of things. But the origin of the term, the Windy City of Chicago, right, has nothing to do with wind or weather.
Oh, really?
It has everything to do with Chicago politics. So going back again to the era of 1920s and the Industrial Revolution in Chicago, where not only the city did it expand rapidly, but Chicago's political influence, not just in the Midwest, but also in Washington, D.C. as well, also expanded. And so Chicago politics was built on empty wishes and boastful politicians. And
loads of promises.
All
made.
These sorts of things, right? And loud speakers and charismatic politicians. And it was the first sort of flavor of this kind of politics came from Chicago. And American English.
Out of which community in particular? Would they have been the Irish community that led that?
It's difficult. I don't know that I could actually pinpoint that. It would...
Hold on. We'll interrupt. So there we are. That was an interruption to take a phone call. So let's go back. Jeremy, I got to ask you. We're talking about Chicago, Windy City, and I can't exactly remember what you were saying, but the word that came to me was windbag. Now, is there any connection then between...
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the word windbag, I'm not quite sure if that was used in American English in the 1920s or 30s. But
who called Chicago the Windy City at that point of view?
I don't know who tagged it. I don't know if it was one particular person who tagged it. More than likely, it stems from some author or a columnist or a reporter who referred to Chicago as a windy city within the political context, and it more than likely stuck.
See, the other word that comes to me is people who fart around.
Sure.
And I just wondered if it had that connotation by any chance.
I think, again, the origin of it is definitely tied to politics and empty wishes and boastful sort of campaigns and things
like
that.
Did Chicago elect a president of the United States? Or, you said that Chicago had increasing influence. Mm-hmm. Would any people from Chicago have become presidents of the United States?
Well, we've got a very famous one who's the president as of today.
You see, I actually don't know enough. Is he actually from Chicago?
Well, he is a resident of Chicago and lived in Chicago for quite some time. Prior to becoming the president.
Yeah. If you can't immediately think of any others, because there have been, I don't know, how many presidents have the United States had?
Well, so he's the 48th president.
Okay, he's the 48th. Yeah, so I'm getting a picture now of 48 presidents, mm-hmm. 49 neighborhoods in Chicago.
Sure.
And am I right, 51 states in the Union?
50 states.
Yeah. 50 states, yeah. Right. Plus Washington, D.C., but that's not a state.
It's a district of Columbia, right.
But I want to ask you about this guy.
Oh, yeah. I've seen pictures of this
now,
guy.
Now, I am putting a small little toy soldier, really.
Uh-huh.
Abraham Lincoln on the dashboard, right?
Yeah.
I go everywhere with Abraham Lincoln with me. and it's my lucky talisman and my hero and everything. But can I ask you if you can remember any of the connections between Abraham Lincoln and Chicago?
And Chicago specifically?
Yeah, specifically Chicago. Now, I put you on the spot. I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah,
but
so
if there are any that you can...
Sure, I think that there would only be one clear connection that I could make. And it's maybe a half guessing based on just information.
Mm-hmm.
And then half maybe speculation, but during his campaign, he was a country boy. I think most people would define him as that. Country boy, not an urban person, not somebody who grew up
on a farm. A farm, a farm
absolutely.
along the banks of the river Mississippi.
You got it right, exactly.
Not that much.
However,
I remember a tiny bit.
However, at the same time during his campaigns in the mid-1800s, this is when Chicago started to establish itself as an urban. At that time, the way that they would define urban would be, large populations, sewer systems, places for business and things like that, of that sort.
Yeah.
And he understood that this was his greatest weakness, and that he had zero familiarity with anything in the urban context. And he knew that in order to win the election, he would have to win his most immediate constituent, which are the people who live in your state.
Right.
And considering at that time, the growing population in the state of Illinois was in Chicago, he had to run on a platform that would appeal to people of Chicago. And of course, political scientists or historians would know the exact details much better than I would. But Abraham Lincoln was a person of inclusion. And of course, I think that most people would agree that urban environments, especially in the American context, tend to be much more inclusive than maybe some of the remote rural areas would be. And it was that overwhelming message of inclusion, both of the black and slavery population, was something that was appealing to maybe the more progressive Chicago American. And therefore, he was able to win the election. And in many ways, he won the hearts of people of Chicago. And still today, we have neighborhoods named after him. Lincoln Park, for example.
Exactly.
We have another neighborhood called Lincoln Square.
They're not the same neighborhood.
Different neighborhoods.
See, I've been going around Chicago for the last few days.
Two neighborhoods.
Thinking that Lincoln Park and Lincoln Square, that Lincoln Square must be...
In Lincoln Park.
In Lincoln Park or whatever.
Two different neighborhoods.
In fact, probably I should have thought the other way around, but never mind. But right.
But we have Lincoln Avenue, which is one of the only diagonal streets in Chicago, because most of our streets go north and south, east and west. And Lincoln Avenue is also... a homage to him. And so in many ways, Chicago still has a very unique love affair with all things Abraham Lincoln.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. I'm glad that I brought the little soldier made by a toy manufacturing tiny company to be found on the road outside McCroom as you head to Killarney on the left-hand side, which is where I got this. And which is where I can tell you that the entire battle scene of Gettysburg is actually replicated in the factory. So you could actually buy, the battle formation for Gettysburg with figures. I can't remember if they would be a little smaller than this. But, there are people who would love that. In fact, no, I'm wrong, because Gettysburg was an address. Mm-hmm. There was also a battle of Gettysburg,
of course,
was there?
Yeah. That's why he gave the address there.
Do you know the story, by the way, of the Gettysburg Address? If I tell you that the guy, that he was the second to speak, Lincoln, on that day, I think I
know that there is something very interesting and that most people do not know.
Some terribly famous speaker spoke before Lincoln for something like an hour.
Yeah,
right.
And then Lincoln spoke without any sort of megaphone or anything.
I think. Forgive me now, is it a minute and a half or was it 3 minutes? But it was really short, I know I've read the Gettysburg Address, a few times and even out loud to myself. I've never recorded it.
Sure.
There are too many great actors who have, Daniel Day-Lewis has done it.
Sure.
And there are several others, it would be I guess if I was going to get a party piece, I actually... would love to be able to do, because it is the most awesome the crafted.
The fact of the Gettysburg Address has always fascinated me. It sort of demonstrates the amount of profound respect people had for the president at that time. It was a sea of people there to hear him speak. And at that time, the technology hadn't existed yet to, project
his voice. Exactly. Absolutely.
And then I think... this is well documented that the president had a very, very, very soft, gentle voice and could not project his voice very well in public. And in order to be heard, he spoke as loudly as he could, but the entire crowd went to a complete hush. And everyone was able to hear him And so sometimes when if I go to a concert or something, I imagine, even if you're just in a lecture room at a university, sometimes we have to mic ourselves just to speak to 100 people. I couldn't imagine speaking to 10 or 15, 20,000 people without a microphone.
It would be very interesting to compare Daniel O'Connell and Abraham Lincoln. Mm. Contemporaries, really. I mean, okay, Lincoln was later than O'Connell, really. But O'Connell had, I don't know how much Irish history you know, but for example, he had what were called monster rallies. And he was a great, great orator. Now, I have no knowledge about how strong his voice was. The other character who is actually famous in Irish oratory as a speaker to masses is Michael Collins. And it would be quite interesting to know how their voice projected. I often wondered, because some of the Irish people anyway, there must have been a process by which people at the front had to tell the people behind them, what did he say? And I wonder if, I mean, there's nobody who would know how Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg mm-hmm. Address, but it
there
is...
There are some images, though.
Right. There probably is a film of him delivering it, and I often wondered whether he delivered it in, you know, short staccato pieces,
sure.
thereby leaving a gap mm-hmm. so that
it
somebody could say, what
crowd.
Did he say? What sure, did he say? So sure, it got passed back. Mm. So, you know, how does it begin? Four score and 10 years ago, our forefathers came to these shores. Uh-huh. I'm not going to carry on because I'm going to get it wrong, right? And if only I had my iPhone set up, I would feel like, oh my goodness, let's just read the Gettysburg Address in the car right now. But as a piece of extraordinary respect. Respect was what I took for it, because he was actually saying, you know, we shouldn't be cock-a-hoop and glad mm-hmm. and you know, delighted that the war is all over.
Mm-hmm. There's still much to be done, that's
no,
for sure.
Those who have died, we have to, you know, respect them. So there was also, there's so much more to be done, but there was also the fact that we cannot be glad while so many of our people have died mm-hmm. in the field of battle, I think. Now, that may be a misinterpretation.
No, I think that's definitely the takeaway.
Would children in school in the United States today, would they learn the Gettysburg Address?
I think elementary students around the 5th or 6th grade of primary school, we would call it elementary school, would start reading it and being asked to recite it or memorize it or speak about their opinion on it and those sorts of things. Now, the interesting thing is that the way that it's taught today would be very much in the technological format, where students would be able to read commentary on the speech at the same time as having it in front of them on an iPad or computer.
So they wouldn't learn it off by heart.
They wouldn't necessarily learn it by heart, and I also would believe that they probably would not have their own opinion as much, maybe, as someone who just read it from, from a piece of paper, because they're able to get so much more additional commentary by reading comments and being able to view it and all those sorts of things. So, in many ways, my fear is that kids will be borrowing opinions versus creating their own.
Well, when I think to the sort of stuff we had to learn off by heart at school, like, at one stage, I once would have had a decent stab at the first 220 lines of Paradise Lost, right? And it would take several times longer to recite the first 200 lines of Paradise Lost, right, than it would the Gettysburg Address. Anyway, here we are. We're back. We've landed. We're on the road now to the coffee house.